Stoka. This is 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back, the podcast where we talk about books we are probably not going to like. Connor, how are you? Oh, that's your smug laugh.
Big cigar puff.
Big Kelsey Grammer-like cigar puff there. Oh, yeah, dear. Yeah, you shouldn't do that during a podcast. Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, God.
We lost one today, guys. Why I'm going to have to go it alone.
Cigars before noon, it's...
Don't get them at your corner bodega.
Oh, those cigars. I didn't want to buy an expensive one. It's
just for your gag, yeah.
I had something to mock you about, so I figured I would chew on a cigar and put my feet up and laugh, cackle.
Are you playing Problem Child 2 silently in the background?
Yes.
Okay, good.
No. I did not smoke a cigar before lunch. But I did get an email that made me sort of assume that mode of cigar smoking mode.
Okay.
It came in based on our first Model Land episode, because we are reading Tyra Banks' Model Land right now. And after last episode, someone wrote in to correct someone's pronunciation. Ironic that I stumbled over that.
I was going to say, coming out of the gate with...
Well, it's the cigar has loosened up a lot of stuff that was in my throat that I didn't know was there. Some nodes. Sure. I'm coughing up nodes. Anyway.
Throat nodes. Yeah.
It was not my pronunciation.
Yeah?
For the first time in podcast history. Well,
was it from the dark... somebody on the dark web mispronouncing
something?
No, it wasn't
one of the players. It wasn't a dark web reenactor. I'll just read you this email. It's because it's from Ben. Hey, guys. I hate to be that guy... off to a great start. No one who has ever said that has actually hated to be that guy. But Mike started it. In the first Model Land episode, Mike insists Theophilus be pronounced Theophilus. What's more, he cites the biblical usage, Theophilus being the addressee of Luke and Acts, as his evidence. And then here's where it gets going. I happen to have a bit of knowledge about Koine Greek. that guy has
figure,
been...
Figure I'm in trouble already.
Has been waiting his entire life to be able to use that sentence in an email. And Mike is wrong, wrong, wrong. Theophilus is the transliteration of a bunch of Greek letters from Greek to English. That first character is a theta that is pronounced with a th sound and most definitely not a hard T. What's more, the first syllable... more Greek characters, or Theo, the Greek word for God. Theophilus means friend of God, and the same root that forms theology. So unless Mike pronounces it theology, it's time to admit defeat. Do you pronounce it theology?
Do you mean the word theology?
I was going to let it go, but when Mike insisted on his pronunciation for the third time, I could not in good conscience remain silent any longer. Love the show. Keep up the good work, Ben.
Well, there it is.
Well.
let me hang on. I'm going to light up my cigar here and give my response.
Oh, wow.
he might be right on the details. I don't know. I don't speak.
He might have the facts correct. However,
the Koine Greek. Here's my defense, however. We're not on the planet Earth when we're talking about this character.
Wow. We're on Metopia.
And there is no such thing as Koine Greek.
Oh.
If I'm pronouncing Koine right, I do not know. So I'll pronounce it any way I please.
Wow. There we go.
However, I probably will adopt your pronunciation.
This is one of those things where it's like, but what if they see green the way that you see blue on this planet, man?
Yeah. In my second defense, I probably had a pastor who said it that way, and I thought it was cool or something.
Uh-huh.
So I probably was trying to put on air. So it's good that I got smacked down a little bit. It's good for the soul.
All right. Well, that's just something that delighted me to no end. I'm taking a trip in a week or two to we'll be driving through Ogden, Utah. We can resume the mockery. As I pass by that highway exit, maybe I'll get off and take a picture.
Driving through what again?
Ogden, Utah.
Nice.
Yeah. I feel like I've conquered conkled that. God damn it. Listen, let's just move on with the show. Yeah, we don't have to talk about pronunciation anymore.
Hoist on your own petard there, my friend.
Damn
all right.
Yeah, well, so we have read the first six chapters for last time. We're doing chapters 7 through 14 this time. We got introduced to Tookie de la Creme, the whole Creme de la Creme family, creamy, miracle, one-eyed circus performer dad. I don't remember his name.
Itchy de la Creme.
Lumpy.
Lumpy de la Creme. Mala de la Creme.
Yes. And yes. We've left off with Tookie having discovered a smize. She's planning her escape with her dear friend Lizzie, who's a homeless urchin who lives in a tree cottage.
I feel like she's sort of a red-haired golem. She sort of sneaks around and, you know, like lurks in the shadows.
Yeah, yeah. You shine a light on her and she bares her fangs at you.
Like yes.
Feral child.
Yes.
But, we've got a various other cast of characters. We have the aforementioned Theophilus. We have his girlfriend, who is sort of she's living a lie of acting all high class, but she actually dumpster dives with her family. But the main point is that we're heading to the Day of Discovery, when the grand priestess of Modelland is going to select a bunch of people to ascend to their academy in a very Hogwartsian type of ritual.
The 7-7 on the day of T-Dod.
Yes.
The abbreviations and I don't know what to even call them, transliteration, whatever they're called.
Mm-hmm.
The wordplay, the letter play, it gets hot and heavy in this thing.
Yes, alliteration as well.
Pappy alliteration.
But also just as we said before, just a book that contains many scenes that we're supposed to just look at. And since it's difficult to understand based on what is actually on the page, we're just supposed to say, it's like this. It's like the golden tickets in Willy Wonka. There's a very, essentially this, the bulk of this section was getting a posse together type of scene, like one last job. Going around and recruiting people with unique quirks to become a crew, getting a crew together.
But before we get to any of that, however, we start Chapter 7 with a good old out-and-out domestic brawl, which is the thing that all young adult novels should have, is two parents cursing each other, wishing death upon each other.
Oh, it's you probably know what the original source is, but we get just it's all out Queen of the Harpies, drunken gin soaked people just like bitterly slinging insults at each other.
I mean, trying for Dickensian stuff here or something.
It's the Night of something, a movie like Elizabeth Taylor maybe. Isn't that what that comes from? There's a Simpsons scene of these two like mid-Atlantic sounding people that are...
Oh, you're talking about Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. They just drink and argue more and more as the night goes on and play crueler and crueler tricks on one another. Yes.
Yes, except one of them is a one-eyed circus performer wearing a lumpy unitard.
Yes. And the other is a cinched up and be-makeuped hag of a woman. Like her body appears to be somewhat normal, but her face is like a popped balloon or something. Just this gross, shrunken thing.
Yeah. You have to imagine ultra tanned as well. I think that's probably implied.
Yes. And she lives among a menagerie of creepy dolls who she arranges just so. So they stare at her while she's applying her coat after coat of makeup to cover the hideous, gross baseball mitt that is her horrible face.
There were swaddled babies, dolls with eyes that opened and closed, dolls that wet themselves and digested food and spoke. Each was positioned just so, an arm curled here, a leg crossed there, their heads pointed straight at Tookie's mother as though she were conducting a meeting with all of them. Tookie wished she could close every single pair of glassy eyes. So it's the stuff of nightmares. It's like a composed shot from if Wes Anderson did body horror type of thing. Just this shot of her sitting square in the middle of a desk with these dolls just pointed at her like the Game of Thrones Iron Throne.
Right. And the horrible one-eyed husband with the lumpy leotard is slamming down a sour-smelling drink called tater mash.
Yeah,
and they start screaming at each other. And he says, "Woman, whether you disappear for an hour or days at a time," Mr. De La Creme scoffed, "you always have some clever excuse." She disappears for days at a time?
Right. Might be slightly worse than justified than this this rage and driven to drink.
Yeah.
And yeah. I did like that her clever excuse was, "We were buying Miracle Address." That's some real brain genius term that she's really mapping that clever excuse out on a big wall and being like, "Will he buy this? Is this?"
Yeah. But it miracle brings us to our first Sonic challenge.
Oh dear!
All right.
Yeah, there's a lot of them in this one,
and it does not contain the word Ogden, so do not worry.
I'm going to try to get ahead of some of the ones that I have coming up to throw them at you.
Okay, that's fine. She paused in the doorway to glance at Miracle, who was sleeping soundly, letting out a giggle snore here and there.
I knew the giggle snore was going to be coming. It's quite a term.
Well, then you've had time to practice.
Yeah, I think it would go a little something like this.
So you imagine Miracle as one of the Three Stooges.
Yes, that's good to her know. Nose flaps as she does that.
Okay.
The Miracle is taking a nap, but Tookie has also just overheard her parents essentially saying that they don't believe she's theirs, and she wants to send them. Her dad wants to send her to a factory.
Yeah, where she would have her head shaved. She would turn into, speaking of Dickensian, yes, like someone working in a coal mine when they were seven or something, is what you're picturing.
She'd become a factory dependent, shaved head, dull-eyed, miserable, penniless children trudging through factory doors. When her father says, "I want to send her to the factory," we get the first of these, I believe, but I hope you like them because we're in for a lot of them. Tookie's eyes goggled. We got goggling eyes become a tick of the writer. I previously associated goggling eyes. It's with a friend of the podcast and Riff Tracks and personal too. Josh Frulinger always refers to the characters. You know the comic strip Shoo by Jeff McNelly, where the sort of sentient birds are in this sort of treetop universe.
Okay.
Josh uses he associates the term, you know, shoe goggle eyes of horror with the way that these characters react. It's sort of their spit take when someone says something unexpected, their eyes goggle. So, you can look that up and see what I now associate with these models doing that.
It is also a trait, we talked off air before this started about, just last night, Kevin Murphy, Bill Corbin and I from Riff Tracks did a live viewing of the Kelsey Grammer, Joey Lawrence film, Money Plane.
Oh, good. It must have been at the height of both of their fame from the early 90s, I would guess, with that sort of cast.
Brand new movie.
Last year.
Directed by Joey Lawrence's brother. It's as good as you would imagine. But Kelsey Grammer was using goggle eyes quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
We referenced that a lot. I think that thing is recorded. You could go over and live watch us after the fact. Don't know where it is though, so look it up.
Probably on the Riff Tracks anyway. Patreon. Did you guys do your own goggling eyes, like in the chat window? I mean, in the video window.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But Kelsey Grammer filmed it at his home because he couldn't be bothered to leave. And why would you? If someone invites, you invite them over to film at your house. I guess I would take that too. So then he's not on the Money Plane, so he literally phones in his performance.
Terrific.
But I think to compensate, he had to like really throw those eyeballs out a lot to kind of, bring it to an 11 all the time.
Well,
so
good.
You can imagine Kelsey Grammer when you see goggling eyes as well.
Sure. Well, so he has taken her toothbrush. He's going to get a DNA test about it because I don't know much about this world, but I guess there are sort of walk-in DNA tests on the sun-parched streets of Pepperland. I don't know. It's not Earth, but maybe that's something you can just get.
Yeah, I don't know. He references how he has later. He says, "I've got a I've got to get to a different appointment. So I guess you can make an appointment to bring your toothbrush in to get to get a paternity test on the daughter that you hate, that you scream at your current wife that she's not mine. I hate her. I'm going to prove that she's not mine, and I'm going to sell her to a factory.
Right. And he punched a wall. He shattered a wall by punching it, which provoked her mom to ask if he's gone crazy. And he had this interesting thing. Mr. De La Creme's skin flushed puce. Well, Creamy, if I'm crazy, you sure are breaking your number one rule, because you're making a hell of a lot of eye contact with the crazy person right now, aren't you? So that's her number one rule, is don't make eye contact with the crazy person. That's what she sits her children down on her knee and instructs them to do. I went back and looked. There was no mention of that. I thought she might have, when she met Wingtip, she might have been like, hey, honey, like, you're breaking my number one rule right now. But I don't know. Be kind could be a good one. Never get involved in a land war in Asia, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But no, don't make eye contact with the crazy person. I guess it's good advice. But just third tier type of thing, like.
Right. Yeah. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's probably going to come up a little bit ahead of this one, but it's like someone being a regular at a Chili's or something. Nobody else is going to take that. So,
right. Sure. Yeah.
I'll do it.
And she does wake up. She is planning to flee, her exodus plan with Lizzie. And she paints a symbol on her door and is planning to escape. She even walks outside with her bag that she's packed in the morning. But her mom wakes up and catches her and just assumes that she was packing a bag for Miracle to go to T-Dodd.
And Miracle, for her part, woke up. Here it is. She paused in the doorway to glance at Miracle, that's the other one. Miracle bounded down the stairs and did a full body wave when she reached the last step.
God.
I'm not familiar with what a full body wave is, are you?
Well, sure. It's one of those things outside of a used car lot.
That's all I could think of.
it's
like,
cause she
feet
did that in
rooted
the last
in one spot, and then it tips over and flops. And
Yeah, just a fancy, I don't know, a new kind of dancing that is a background dancer in a Broadway show or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, she did that when she entered the room with Brian last time, right? She sort of jazzed hands and like... resembled a parenthesis or something.
Yes. I was fooled again, even though we talked about it last week. You know, you have this big space of not reading, and so I'm reading, and then Brian Quincy was in the car. And I was totally fooled again. I'm like, who in the hell is Brian Quincy? Did a search on it, and there was no mention of him.
Yeah.
Because it's only Brian, so I should have just put Brian.
Yeah.
But it fooled me again, even though we already talked about it.
It is always funny when you get that extra detail, because I have no idea how big a role Brian is going to play in this book. My money would be on not very much, but we did meet him last time. He sort of laughed at Miracle's terrible jokes, but he was just Brian, and then we get this really fleshing out the character more by giving him the last name.
Yes, that really helped. I assume he's just the same age friend, right? I have no physical picture of Brian.
Yeah.
Brian Quincy, sorry.
Sorry, yeah. I think they've got, maybe like a Thomas J. and Veda Sultanfuss thing going on, just a platonic friendship. Brian seemed like sort of a dim bulb.
Everybody knows what you were talking about there.
Good. But yeah, he's just maybe just that sort of dopey kid whose parents are just like, go run around and play with his family.
Sure.
But Brian noticed Lizzie was in the front yard when they left. And the father said, Creamy, there's a dirty girl in our yard. Ugh, Brian looked too. She looks like roadkill. And like you said before, Gollum. But like maybe Gollum would be insulted by this comparison if you just see him and she looks like she's a flattened possum.
It was about at this point where I just wrote the note, imagine filming this scene, making a movie about the vicious fighting with a drunken guy who's like mangled and mutilated, an ugly woman. Her terrible story of how like she had the baby in secret because, some deep, dark, a play from the 50s kind of thing, like, oh, baby's dead, just wretched stuff. And then the little girl being told she's not the daughter. And it just, I mean, how do you film that?
Right. How do you make that light at all? Which is sort of what we're supposed to have takeaways from here. Because everyone else is sort of, you know, she's doing full body waves and is very pretty. We're told Mariko is. And it's in a cartoon world, you know, like the with the baby dolls and the unopened books and the sort of house falling apart. So it's hard to take any of it seriously except for the multiple horrible, depressing things.
Right. Yes. One dirty other roadkill girl stalking them. Yeah, yeah, it's all it's a nightmare.
And then to add on to that, Lizzie then, as she sees Tookie and her family driving away, lets out a shrill, window-shattering, eardrum-piercing scream, a sound that sent tremors through Tookie's limbs. So essentially she does the Donald Sutherland body snatchers point and yell.
Yeah, or the Nazgul was the other thing I thought of when they flew over and those horrible ear-rending shrieks.
Yeah. Yeah, and it says it's a sound Tookie would never forget as long as she lived. I'm so sorry, Tookie called. And then so it started at window-shattering, eardrum-piercing, and it says Lizzie's scream was intensifying as Tookie moved away from her. So it's, you know, you're going to have houses leveled. You're going to have permanent ear damage in neighbors. It's one of those things. You know how they say when Krakatoa exploded at like the turn of the 20th century, like you felt the tremors like on the other side of the globe, literally. It's going to be one of those type of events.
It's like the have you ever made a whistle out of the top of an acorn? You know, the little cup of an acorn?
No, but my mom would always do the blade of grass between her thumbs.
Yeah, take that blade of grass whistle and amplify it. You can... You sort of put it between the webs of your fingers and then you blow down on it. It is the loudest whistle. And the harder you blow, it just gets louder. It doesn't like, you know, with some whistles, like you can only get to a certain volume. Mm-hmm. This is just intense. And that I feel like it could be heard from miles and miles away. But Lizzie's scream was like 20 times that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is a weird thing of society that we tolerate. I mean, we're annoyed by it, but we do. People feel like it's acceptable when you can, when they can do the put two thumbs in your mouth and blow the horrible ear piercing whistle. That's something people do in society. Whereas if you walked around with an air horn and did that in people's to get people's attention or at a baseball game or something, you would be thrown out immediately. But that's allowed.
Go
to hell, people who whistle with their thumbs. Is my point.
Wow, look what just came out of Connor. Smoke one cigar before breakfast.
And, yeah, start issuing edicts.
Yeah.
Anything else for this? This was one thing. This was just good writing, I felt, like this. Patented Tyra Banks subtlety. The smize rattled inside its case as if it were trying to escape. It was a feeling that Tookie understood far too well. An inanimate object did something. It was like this. Tookie understood because it was how she felt as well.
Yes. Ah, yeah. She's hammering that point home. Mm-hmm. Chapter 8.
Yeah. Welcome to T-Dodd is the subtitle.
So our intrepid narrator, or I don't know, what have we decided? This is the Belladonna?
Yeah, I think that was sort of what we guessed at last time.
Instead of doing like, darling, welcome to this new chapter, we get a discussion of the people who are rejected.
Yes.
How they turn into, speaking of golems, they turn into these plague-ridden, nightmarish zombie people. Mm-hmm. Who are, let me just see that the plague is worse than the one you might already be familiar with.
Okay.
The B1.
So the Black Plague does exist in this world.
Right. That plague induces seizures, fevers, chills, gland swelling, and upchucking of blood and the decomposition of skin while one is still alive. But I will take the bubonic plague any day. So this plague is far, far worse.
Well, it doesn't seem like it's that much worse because it doesn't seem to, A, be communicable, and B, you enter into this walk voluntarily, so that's the only subset of people it's going to affect.
And then this has to be the only time that, you know, again, you have to imagine this woman is reading, this plague is worse than you might already be familiar with, darling, the bubonic plague. But it can be ousted from the body with a simple swallow of one or two of the mycins, genta or strepto, darling. Uh-huh. What the hell is that? We're getting medicine jokes here? We're getting anti-inflammatory jokes or antibacterial jokes?
So there's some doctors who were like working on curing cancer, and they were like, no, you got to develop two competing treatments for the, 13 through 17-year-old girls who come down with the plague because they wanted to be modeled.
Yes, the Pilgrim Plague, right, as it is called.
I like that it was like the first telltale symptoms are the plague, and I'm like, ooh, in this world, are these going to be pleasant things? Is this going to be like, euphoria or laughing fits or something? No, it's profuse sweating, massive headaches, and bulging veins, which, like, it doesn't sound that different from what a lot of these people were going through in their day-to-day lives in Peppertown.
Yeah, I was thinking about the... it's mentioned again about Peppertown, but people are just walking around. And wasn't it mentioned at one time that the sidewalk would literally like fry your skin off?
Yeah, you couldn't stay in bare feet in it or something.
That seems to have been dropped, but I don't know.
Right, yes.
It would be hard to deal with at Peppertown if you did have the profuse sweating, massive headaches, and bulging veins. I would guess that it would just be very irritating to be in Peppertown.
Sure, that's like sort of a, oh, and now this type of thing.
Yeah.
Something else that sort of pervades this section of the book that we read, and I assume it keeps going on, is extremely uncatchy chants. We get characters who just launch into these things that, your typical chant is like, hey, hey, ho, ho, so-and-so has got to go. Or like, at sports events, you just chant like, you suck, or like that type of thing. These people have these intricate, like, multi-metered things that are just not at all something that you would be doing at an event like this. The first one is a protester who's trying to protest the whole of T-Dot Day. They're holding up signs that said, so this is a sign, mm-hmm. Women don't walk, it's all a sham, T-Dot's a crock, a phony exam. So you're supposed to read that and realize that it is chanting, but it's signs at these events usually just have some sort of like, and I don't want to say what the ones I've seen say, but like, this is a little too intricate for this type of thing.
I think so. And I, far prefer to, if Daryl Strawberry is around, to
right.
say, Daryl.
Right, right. When you're trying to get a whole stadium to join in, you got to keep it pretty simple.
Keep it trim. Yeah, yeah.
The little bit more of world building is that there are obscure obelisks that have appeared 3 months ago. So there's all sorts of things that she's setting up a house of cards with the disappearance of Seal, the wingtip guy, these obelisks. And Mrs. De La Crim says, those damn ugly ass obelisks, and they block the view of the mountain. And then Tookie launches into some great sort of Anakin Skywalker, George Lucas dialogue. I don't think they're ugly. Tookie gazed at them with wonder. I think they're architecturally interesting. The 15-year-old girl thought to herself.
A phrase that you have at your lips.
Yes.
this entire scene, very hard to picture. It's some sort of town square where they all march around.
Yeah.
The girls.
Yeah. It's and this is so close to Model Land that it seems like a lot of people come to here to be at the sort of epicenter of everything.
Yeah, and so they're told they have to walk.
Yeah, that's the one rule.
And you cannot, what does it say? No, like, jetés, no no dance moves or anything like that. So that full body wave, that's not going to help her at all.
Yeah, they're very emphatic about that. They're like, dance in your head, Miracle. Like, you can't be doing it on stage. But yeah, I was sort of imagining, like, the running of the bulls type of thing.
Yeah, and everyone is there in the town, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But this is happening in all the other four quadrants as well?
As well as thousands of other cities all over the world. So that's the first real glimpse we have that there are other places doing this.
Okay. This is getting out of control here.
Yes, they're getting beyond their wheelhouse very quickly.
And then swinging in on a wire... Correct me if I'm wrong on any of these details.
Okay.
Devin Rump the Sixth, the mayor of Metopia.
Yes.
Like, comes in like wire work, right? From like swinging around through the crowd.
Yeah, I think he's just doing a sort of Cirque du Soleil, Mayor Rump.
And what is this supposed to be? Like, what are we imitating here?
I could only think about, like, the mayor of Halloween Town or something, just sort of the bulbous guy that comes down and introduces all this stuff. But I don't know what we're supposed to be thinking, because we get great Kleinian descriptions. He's surrounded by, I guess, the city councilmen.
Yes.
And it says, each councilman's wife was decked out in the products his quadrant's factories were famous for. Moving on. It's a real, they performed a variety of 80s dance moves type of thing. And just, oh, sure, the quadrant's factories. We all know what products they're famous for. It's as if you were told, you know, he ate the famous sandwich that Philadelphia was known for. Oh, sure, a cheesesteak. We're all familiar with that. But it's Pepper Town of Metopia. We have no idea what you're talking about.
Mayor Rump, Mayor Devin Rump.
Sure. I wanted to send you something. I wanted to read you a sentence and then send you a picture of the. I'll read you the sentence. I just sent it to you. It says they arrived at the Walker's village. They found a clear patch of grass and dropped their bags of gear. Most of the girls were changing in the open, their body parts exposed for the world to see.
Wow.
So it's just a weird little thing to write about. I think Billy Miracles 13. Just take a look at this. Is the guy that was the suspected ghostwriter of Model Land.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So just think about that guy whenever you read this stuff, because it gets a lot, you know, there's a lot of this coming up that's this sort of oddly, you know, it seemed like it'd be less of a big deal if it was all Tyra's vision. But when you see that smiling guy who's older than me, I think that would be, it makes it a little weirder.
He looks like this guy is actually still in the public eye. I can't mention it, but a comedian who I worked with,
okay,
who was, everyone resented him because he had like a big head like this guy, and he did super bland stuff, but people really did love him, mm-hmm. and he already had another successful job or something, uh-huh. so all the other comedians who were all losers,
right.
and this guy's like driving a really nice car to his gigs. And
yeah. You don't have to do this. Yeah.
Yes.
Go be happy.
Yeah, it always bugged us. Anyway, that's who he looks like. I hope that helps people out there.
Sure, yeah. But yeah, this is just getting ready for the big event, which involved Miracle sucking on her bottom lip, which I think is a 372 staple at this point in time.
It is a 372 staple, but this time, so she does it once, she's chewing on various parts, sucking, but then Miracle sucked on her bottom lip, eating off her lip gloss, and then stared blankly into her father's eyes.
She's just a cow chewing her cud, like...
Who are these people?
Drool, you know, is about to start coming down from her lower lip. Yeah. But yes. The smize has also sucked its way onto her face like a... Like something from Alien or something. That's how it attaches itself to you.
Yes. Yeah. Still not a real good description of how that works or whatever. Mm-mm. You know, are they just like horn rim glasses, or do they kind of?
Huh. Yeah. It says.
I feel like it kind of sucks onto the face and then makes it like you have eye makeup on or something.
Yeah. It says it wiggled itself into place, rested above her eyes. Its undulating colors creating the most magnificent eyeshadow effect Tookie had ever seen. We're left to imagine that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the end of this chapter is just they're ready to go. So this was just like lining up at the line for the marathon or something, right?
Uh-huh.
Just crowds of people,
right? But but if the marathon was, you know, a free for all where harming your fellow contestants was not only encouraged but found amusing by all the spectators and other people.
Yes.
Which takes us into chapter 9. Which I think starts off by saying that violence was not encouraged, nor was it condemned, and some girls' parents insisted on adding martial arts training to their walking lessons in preparation for the big day. So that sets the stage for the utter nightmare that is the T-Dot.
It's both hard to follow and also just sort of horrific.
Yeah. You get a scene that is essentially like slow motion, you know, wreckage. People like, you know, clutching the wounded as Samuel Barber plays.
Yes. The De La Cremes had a tent mm-hmm. set up, and that immediately just gets knocked down by two brawling girls.
Right. It is. There's no real time for anything to happen before violence mars the entire event.
One of them is the previously mentioned Harry Hag.
Yeah.
Abigail, the Harry Hag was Abigail Good. Sideburns in full glory, faint mustache above her upper lip, unshaven leg hair coating her calves, underarm hair swaying in the wind, and a down with razors picket sign still in her hands.
Yeah.
The girl she was fighting with tried out a karate move on her, but Abigail expertly evaded her blow. What the hell is going on?
I don't know. I thought that was amazing because it's like a woman named Kenya attacks her using the Gayaku Zuki move. Her mother screams, reverse punch the hairy hag. So I guess we're supposed to be like, she's hairy. That's funny that there she's getting attacked by another person on this day. But it's fairly horrific, I guess.
Yeah, she's and also she goes to the T-Dot to protest people who shave.
She's protesting razors, but she's still participating in the event, I guess. So she's
okay. So she's just a double. Double mission there.
I guess, but it's also, you know, you've got to anticipate this as her having the same odds as William Hung on American Idol getting chosen.
Right.
Like if she's this out of the mainstream.
Who, by the way, made my youngest son cry because he saw when William Hung came on and then they all laughed at him and made fun of him. He was like, Mom, why are they laughing at him? Poor guy.
It's impossible to imagine him having a reaction that was that far different from, you know, what we watched and were like, well, this is the appropriate thing that everyone's laughing at this guy. Yes. The innocence of a child empathizing was beyond foreign to anyone else watching American Idol. It's very sweet.
It is.
I feel like, you know, of course there are things that get talked about that people who are, you know, we're not born when that happened now are hopefully listening to this, but I don't know if that's I find myself talking about William Hung a lot and I just hope it resonates with people.
Oh, that's going to be like, you want to feel old?
Yep.
These people don't even know who William Hung is.
It came up. He is, believe it or not, on Cameo. So if you want a William Hung to wish your friend a happy birthday and then sing She Bangs, he's happy to do that it was a surprisingly affordable fee.
what would it be?
It was, you know, I think it was under $50. That model who was in the movie we just did, who was on Real Housewives, was $75. So William Hung cannot possibly be more than that. Oh yeah, $30. He'll say hi to you. And I did look at that. I think it was a fantasy football booby prize or something. We were talking about it, and like, you know, 75% of them were ending with the half-hearted "she bangs, she bangs."
Oh dear. Sad way to make a living, but more power to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Why were we talking about? Oh yeah, for Abigail Good. We get another catchy slogan. Tookie chuckled when she noticed that even some of the protesters had ditched their "Runaway, don't walk" signs and sashayed energetically while chanting, "Women, let's walk, smile for the cams, T-Dot, it rocks, crank the music, let's jam." So, like, is there one of those bouncing balls with the lyrics? Or, like, someone who's pointing at people who just, like, don't get the chant the first time? Because that has multiple movements. Like, it's going to be very hard for, you know, instead of "what do we want, blank, when do we want it now" type of thing.
Maybe it's, you know, it's like a well-known tune. You know, it's Yankee Doodle Dandy to them, so they already know it.
Sure,
so
I suppose.
It's just easy to sing or something.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I remember my grandmother, you know, bouncing me on her knee and teaching me the T-Dot, you know, pro T-Dot chant for when I would finally be able to walk.
She's just hanging out there. She's just watching Miracle try not to dance. Mm-hmm. And then Theophilus shows up.
Uh-huh.
Her Theophilus, crush. Yes, along with Zarpessa Zarianu.
Yes, his girlfriend, the seemingly rich but dumpster diving foil. It's going to be. She's the Draco Malfoy of this story.
And I feel like this exposure here, this little meeting, moves the story forward exactly zero.
Yes,
it's just that he's there.
Right. He
that's it.
Acknowledges her, and but then Zarpessa comes and interrupts it.
Yes.
But Zarpressa, when she walks over to interrupt it, she strutted confidently right over an open manhole that three girls had just fallen into.
Jeez.
So you have to imagine that results in a compound fracture at least, but, you know, the first girl is probably dead
if possible death.
Two girls
sure.
have fallen yeah. on top of her.
Yeah, especially if you kind of, you know, hit those metal ladders on the way down. You're not surviving.
Oh, my God,
that.
Yeah. Oh, it's a... The fact that that has actually happened to people is something that, you know, when you think about just walking out of your house, what might befall you? That's probably one of the worst ways to go.
Yes. But as he leaves, maybe this is the reason Theophilus showed up. I'd better go. Theophilus tipped an imaginary hat to Tuki.
Whew.
So how old is this kid?
That's a hard one to swallow, I think. An actual fedora would be bad enough.
It's a Riff Tracks cliche, but the ladies thing, and that's what it reminded me of. And the origin of that, as I recall, was I was walking around the lakes in Minneapolis once, and some bros, like in a car, you know, shirts off and visors on backwards, see a couple of good-looking women, and they go, ladies? What are you, like some French boulevardier strolling down the Champs-Élysées? You're a dude, brah.
Yeah, please. We all know that the proper way to entice them is to say, hey, good looking. I'll be back to pick you up later.
I'll be back to pick you up later, of course.
I thought that ladies, we have competing things here. I thought it was just a something that my friends in college would sort of jokingly aggressively say as people were, you know, as they were passing by, like, ladies to sort
that's
of mock
the beauty
the
of ladies because yeah. It's multifaceted.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Can use it in any situation,
different parts of the country, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But we get more hardship for Abigail Good. She'd already been, I think, called a hairy hag and reversed Kaiaku Zen punched or something. Miracle gets on stage and comes face to face with Abigail Good. Both girls vied for the same spot to pose. Miracle stuck out her pointy elbows, bumped her hip, and shoved Abigail hard out of the space. Abigail teetered over in her high shoes, hit her head on the footrest of an old man's motorized scooter, and passed out cold.
Really treating her well.
She doesn't shave her armpits. But yeah, so she has now received a concussion, so that's funny.
Yeah.
But people die all the time in the Harry Potter books, I guess, but it usually isn't played for laughs.
No, right.
It's usually just like, you know, Hogwarts, like there has been another death, and the kids sort of just, you know, sort of weep in the Great Hall, but this is just sort of like a, you know, Chumbawamba is playing in the movie scene as this happens.
You know they're waiting by the phone. I hope they make Model Land into a movie.
Someone got knocked down. Yes. The William Hung cover is what they'll go for, yeah. Tub thumping.
There's a lot of this, but I'll just pull out one at random. The you know, picture what's going on.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Sure, no problem. I'll picture this. It broke apart and reassembled as a slender, mysterious-looking woman in a black metallic jumpsuit. Her head glowed as if it contained a light bulb. Sure, I'll just throw that together in my mental image right away.
Right.
No problem.
For a book that relies so much on just feeding you stuff that you sort of already can picture, this scene gets utterly insane with what it wants you to conjure up. And it just tosses, yeah, that was what, a sentence and a half to describe something happening?
Yes.
We also got this one. A stunning scout emerged from the rubble with skin that seemed to be made of rough stone. She wore a bathing suit ensemble that appeared to be made of rocks. What? Skin is rough stone, or it seemed to be made of rough stone, so it's not. And that she wore a bathing suit ensemble that appeared to be made of rocks. Not sure how that works at all, but that is more... closer to actually being made of rocks because it appears to be like that.
Right. Well, now that you've got that concrete image in your head, just put this one in because now the scouts are coming.
Scouts are coming, and those are who picks these students to go to Model Land.
And it's I think she's trying to get it like these sort of magical events as these scouts appear.
Mm-hmm.
But you're doing a lot of work here. Okay. Bzz, bzz. Tookie looked down and gasped. A strip of the diamond-encrusted roof of the car had transformed into a thick layer of brilliant fabric. Yeah. As she watched, even more of the roof disappeared and reappeared as cloth. The fabric looked as if it were being spontaneously woven by a giant loom. Whoa, she whispered. So, picture that.
I just said...
A diamond-encrusted roof of a car transforming as if it's being loomed by a spontaneous... loom somewhere.
I just thought it was like being cornered in the break room by a coworker who wants to tell you about their dream.
Yes.
When you're doing a dream, you're like, you know how it was my bedroom, but it wasn't? And you're like, no. That's a very vague and terrible way to describe something. That's what
it's
this
kind
is
of
like.
Kind of my uncle, but it was also a deer, you know? All right.
Yeah, and then there's also a question mark-shaped crack in the sidewalk, and it says, the roof had finished its diamond-to-fabric transformation. There was a slight pause, and Tuki felt the world around her go silent. The whole roof began to tremble. Suddenly, the fabric split violently in the very center, knocking Miracle off the roof. She fell to the ground almost in slow motion. The fabric plays a big role in this going forward. Like, things are just...
Oh, there's... Yeah.
Yeah. It was
later,
this,
there's
but made
a fabric,
of fabric
scene that's... Yes. It's very confusing bits of fabric writing in this. Especially if, like me, you're fairly ignorant of the fabrics being described.
Yes.
Because they're like, you know, dress
brand
fabrics.
Names, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the scout appearing. I had one more thing that was depicting the horrors here. This is that the clock is ticking down. The shopping cart of one of the homeless women flew from her hands and rolled wildly around the square. Girls near the cart ran away screaming. Dozens of fights broke out. At least six girls lay on the marble ground nursing their wounds. So it is just this is like in a scene of a movie where an explosion has happened and the characters' ears are ringing and they're sort of walking along dazed and the people around them are all just, you know, crawling and then there's dust settling. This is what the long-awaited celebrated T-Dot is that happens every year.
Yeah, it's, either the opening or one of the ending scenes of Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
The concussion happens near enough to him that he... completely loses, you know, sentience, and just you hear the shadowy voices in the background whispering and
out of focus guys holding their blown off limbs type of thing.
Yes, that's what T dot is, and a ringing in the ears of all the people.
But with 13-year-old girls showing their body parts to the world, surprising nobody, this scout appears. And extends their long, slender, radiantly decorated hand to Tuki. So we had short fingers, but we've righted the universe. Everything is right because we have a long hand.
Which I was a little worried about that.
Implies the existence of long fingers.
Yep. How many books does that make it?
It's a vast majority, I think, at this point in time. Which, you know, I don't read good books the same way as these, but I feel like if I was reading a good book, if you were reading the biography of Winston Churchill or something and it talked about how long his fingers were, you'd probably notice that, but maybe I'm just not reading them with the same eye.
Yeah, and it's also a thing where if I, before embarking on this thing, had said to you, what do you think will be the common thread to all these pad books that you write? And then I gave you a list of things. And,
right.
You know, long, slender fingers and hands was on there. You would pass that over for sure.
I would be like, what were you on when you came up with this weird thing? Like, I've never even considered that as being potential. Like,
right.
Unless we're reading books of about, you know, like flamenco guitar players or NBA stars or something. Like,
right.
What else would a long hand possibly have anything to do with?
That guy who was in the Guillermo del Toro movie who had his eyes in his hands or whatever. Yeah,
sure. Mr. Fantastic, but only with his fingers.
Yeah.
A third tier, like Image Comics superhero. And now we start chapter 10. Big Boutique. Nope, I didn't get it right. Boo Big Teak Nation. Every single time I read it. But I think that's sort of what they're hoping you will do is screw up the very basic joke they're making here.
She has a knack for that, though. That just doesn't ring at all with me. Beau Big Teak.
I think it's supposed to be
nation.
Like Big Boutique Nation.
Yes. Also, but like, never mind. Okay. Why are we trying to figure out?
Well, because, so this is, we start moving along to assemble the, get the crew together here. And this is where we meet Dylan. And we sort of come to realize that we're assembling people of all different, like, body types and looks. And so Dylan is the thick member of the crew here.
Mm-hmm.
She's the full-figured gal. But where she comes from is the Boo Big Teak Nation, which is a place where people live inside a big box superstore.
I guess so, yeah. I was still trying to figure out the pouch and everything. We need to discuss that. But before that, when we talked, when I learned that we were going to meet Dylan, I realized there's only one way to greet Dylan.
Yes.
And that's with a giant handshake. Dylan, you son of a bitch.
You son of a bitch. Dylan! Wow, yes.
So they wrongly greet this Dylan, but let it pass.
Yeah, sure. I'll be happy to. Maybe we'll get that later. That guy looks like he could have been a Predator fan that I sent you earlier.
Yes.
But yeah, so the scout flies away with Tookie in a pouch.
What are you picturing there?
I mean, I was sort of, it wasn't accurate, but I was just like, oh, so it's like Glinda the Good Witch's little bubble that she floats around in?
Well, here, I'll see if this makes it clearer. Sure. A flash of golden yellow light surrounded them. A strong sucking sensation pulled at Tookie's feet and then her legs, then her stomach and her back, in that order. Her body tumbled into a brilliant, sheer fabric that spewed from the scout's fingers. More fabric surrounded her, enveloping her bottom and leg, and the force of a billion hands lifted her up and buoyed her into the air. Suddenly, Tookie was in some kind of translucent mesh pouch. So, like a big dog catcher's net?
Yeah, I guess that's close. You know, shaped like if you cut a pocket out of the inside of your jeans, it would be like that. Just a rectangular mesh pouch. Sure,
but then magical. but then it starts scooping up others. So the size of it, I'm having trouble with the size and any structure. Because if you threw a bunch of humans into a giant sack, they would really be, you know, you'd be getting a lot of knocked heads and teeth coming out and stuff, right?
Yeah. It's hard enough to stand up on like a bounce house type of thing. This would be, there's no integrity to the bottom of it. So
yeah. So I just didn't understand what this was, because as more people get scooped up.
Yeah.
In this pouch.
It plays a big role, the pouch.
It does.
And so they emerge out. They see Lizzie, which is interesting because they fly over her and they immediately recognize her, but they're too high for Lizzie to see them. She wails and says, "I'm sorry," type of thing. But then they emerge from what Tookie decides is the inside of a plant stem into the Boo Big Teak Nation, which is essentially Home Depot combined with Walmart, and people live inside of it.
This one is very hard to figure out.
Well, they try to provide you some explanation in the form of speaking of 80s movies, an over-the-top narrator who is... So they're doing the whole walking thing here, and a PA system. They've employed a person to sort of say this... for the purposes of anyone reading this book, because it obviously doesn't benefit anyone who's actually there, because there's a guy saying, like, "Strawberries and cream are mixing it up in a blender on aisle number 197, cracked a voice over the loudspeaker. I wonder what that juicy smoothie is going to taste like. So it is someone's job to be doing that in the Boo Big Teak Nation.
So it's like, well, again, this is for older people, but MASH had that. A voice would just say, you know, It didn't exist in reality, but it would like bring you up to date and make little jokes and things.
Great, yeah.
It was like a you know, breaking the fourth wall kind of a thing.
Well, yeah, that's what this is doing. But it also, just remember, you know, the guy I sent you. Girls and ladies, chicks and dames, the strawberry on aisle number 197 is one sexy knockout. We need assistance. Can someone please back that thing up and get over here now?
Wow.
Yeah. they start talking about that. Dylan is introduced here. She's also referred to as having a very sexy walk, even as she's sliding in an oil spill and stuff.
Somebody knocked over a bunch of oil, like a bunch of it.
Yeah. Clean up on aisle 289 or something.
Dylan was shaped like a bottle of Boo Big Teak Cola. Okay.
Store brand.
Got
sure.
That in here. And had a heart-shaped face. Her lips were full and naturally raspberry-colored, and her lavender blue eyes sparkled. Her thick, healthy, golden blonde hair stretched to her butt, and she wore it in two ponytails, one on each side of her head. Her monochromatic outfit was the exact hue of her lavender blue eyes. An apron with strips of blinking lights displayed Boo in bold across her chest, big in block letters down her thigh, and Teak in script across her buttocks.
Oh, my God.
Again, I'll just send back that picture of the guy who's writing this.
It's just so much to process at once because they're all confusing images on their own. And so you just, you know, let me catch my breath, man, as I try to process one of these.
This is tough reading, I think. Mm-hmm. Just trying to picture all this stuff and take it seriously.
Right.
I told you off air, it is like the part of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory when he takes them in the boat. You know, the nightmare scenario.
Yes.
Centipedes crawling and stuff.
Chickens getting their head cut off, I think.
Just, yeah, weird images being thrown at him while he's, like, counting and, just, you know, people are screaming. And that's this book length, you know.
Yes.
It just keeps going on. Like, what is this new image? What?
Right, yeah. It's like you're reading it while your eyes are held open by one of those clockwork orange machines.
Yes.
But then, you get the crazy, you know, descriptions of people. Like, it's still hard for me to picture her outfit because it doesn't make any sense. I don't know exactly what she looks like for being a brand of Boo Big Teak store brand cola. But then you get stuff like this, like, okay, so since the day you were born here in the Boo Big Teak hospital, nursed on wombat milk, you've dreamed of going to Model Land.
That joke fell flat with me. I do not know what's happening there.
I don't either. It comes up again, but I did just to make sure this wasn't something that had been mentioned earlier. It wasn't, so it could be just a regional delicacy or something.
So wombats exist in this world.
Yes. Yeah, right. Marsupials, yeah. Not just confined to Australia, I guess.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so Dylan gets selected. She says, I'm going to Model Land, me. Dylan ran her hands over her generous hips, then shrugged. Maybe a little, or should I say a lot, of some Boo Big Teak booty is just what Miss Model Land needs. So they make their own little joke there based on their tortured construction of the store slash land that they live in.
Yes.
It's,
yep.
It's more of just the... like we talked about last time, the giving something a joke name and then making the joke about the joke.
Oh, perfect example in, I'll reference it again, last night, Money Plane with Kelsey Grammer and Joey Lawrence. There's a young black guy who's one of the partners in the scheme, but he takes on the nom de plume McGillicuddy.
Okay.
And then they keep making jokes about, like, you don't look Irish to me. Ugh. So you named him. You can't.
Right.
You can't say that.
Oh, all right. So continuing on with 372 money planes, we'll never get back. We got a Dylan is known to faint whenever she gets excited, yes. Scared, or in shock.
She's a fainting goat. Yes.
That's going to come in later. Yeah. You can say boo to her and that will happen. Or you can say boo Big Teak and that will happen.
Yes.
And, but she gets spirited away into the pouch. And the last thing that I had here was, as they're leaving, the over the top PA announcer says, all right, little losers, tissues for your boo hoos and bandages for your boo boos can be found in aisle 222s. So, obviously, and clearly, Tyra Banks intended that as a reference to Dale M. Courtney's Moon People. The 222 was the dish that they would get in the diner that the hero was taking his dates to when they couldn't get into Red Lobster.
I have that circled in my notes right here, yes. That was, of course, a reference to that.
Well, hopefully we don't have any sort of Model N events happening on Halloween.
Oh, God. Heaven forbid.
Chapter 11, Shiraz. This one gets off to quite a start. Because if you had trouble picturing the pouch when it wasn't full of thick white goo, then boy, do we have some surprises for you here.
What is happening here? do you want to read it?
This all happens within the span of maybe one paragraph, I think. I eliminated the non-goo related sentences, but this all happens very quickly. In seconds, the pouch began to fill with thick white goo. Tookie tried to move, but the goo had already reached her waist. The goo grew thicker and thicker until it was difficult for her to move. Suddenly, the goo released them. So we got a big goo scare. But it moves on pretty quickly.
And then they tumbled, turned around, and saw a 7-foot candle busted open down the middle. So was that the goo?
Yes. I believe as they emerged from a plant stem into the Boo Big Teak Nation, they have since emerged from a candle into the world of Con del Abra.
And Dylan wiped some remaining goo from her eyes and then says, did we for real just pop out of a candle?
Yeah, they've hit their goo quota. No more goo, I'm saying.
And the veiled scout was still in front of them, flapping away now in a waxy diamond-covered bodysuit. Wow, why do I have to picture that now? I don't even have the previous version of the scout in my mind's eye.
Yeah. The scout is some sort of like tentacle necklace too that just sort of gets dropped in there. Like no tentacles, no goo. We can't have this going down this road.
Well, we get a lot of Sonic challenges here.
Yeah, we sure do. listen, like just hit me with it. I'm down. I'll try.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to spell this out for the members of the listening audience out there. Mm-hmm. So every single letter here is accented.
Yes.
But I'll read the letters. The first word is A-E-I. The second word is E-I. A-E-I-I. A-U-E-E-E-I. I-I-E-U. E-E-E-A-A-U-A-U-O-A-A-I is all one word. E-I, and then ending with A-E-I-I.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Got it?
It's pretty much that volcano that erupted 10 years ago.
Yeah. What do you got for that? I'm sure you have it there. You can read it.
I do. Of course, it's right here. It's bolded. Okay. It's being said by a tall, olive-skinned teenage girl with nervous eyes.
Okay. So let that inform your performance.
That was my tall, olive-skinned teenage girl with nervous eyes speaking labrium.
Wow.
What were you going to do?
Well, I was wondering if went a little dolphin-y there.
Right.
I was wondering if it was going to be more like elven or something.
Gaelic, yeah. It sounds like you're a theremin.
I'm not saying it's better. That's just what I was picturing. Right.
Yeah, so we get thrown this absurd language. I mean, honestly, I saw that, and it looked like there had been some sort of OCR, character recognition flaw, as it went over there. It looked like, you know, it spit out gibberish when your computer crashes or something. But now it's in the print book as well.
Yes, and then the Labrian girl, who I assume that she's speaking this in Labrian.
Yeah, we sort of get the Tookie can understand Labrian, so then she's the babblefish type of thing. We don't need to see that language written anymore.
But here's one of those very, very catchy chants, okay, like you said. This is a song.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll sing it as a Labrian girl. Your frock needed steam. I'm sorry I'm tardy. You're a Labrian dream, the belle of this party.
Huh? So she's a like a dry cleaner. So imagine how quickly, if you went to pick up like a suit and you were going to a wedding or something, you would be like, can I just pay? Please stop singing. Like, it's as awkward as like the Cold Stone Creamery when you tip them and they're forced to like half-heartedly sing, you know, something to the town of like Camp Town Races.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah, each of those chain things had their own song, right? Because nobody could sing Happy Birthday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they'd always have something with clapping in it.
Like, birthday, it's your birthday. You came in here today.
And everyone's just like, would you just sing us Happy Birthday? Right. Oh, you had, can't do that.
You know, it was annoying that those, I think it was two sisters owned that for so long. I don't know how it got wrested away from them, but you have to admire to some degree that flex that they were going to like, no, we will sue you for a song that we own the rights to.
Yes, I think some company held it. Huh. I think they discovered that they probably, since it never was theirs to begin with, but they strong-armed everyone, that they probably extorted like $1 billion out of people for Happy Birthday.
Oh, I just wanted to point out that as they were landing, the candle smelled like fudge, So the goo-filled candle smelled like fudge, and Tookie grimaced when Dylan asked her if she loved fudge. Chocolate was practically the only food she didn't like. Dylan's eyes goggled.
Yes.
So that's great. But the woman who was singing that catchy laundry song is Shiraz, and her thing is that she is very petite.
7 inches and 4 feet tall.
I circled that because I, of course, read it like a normal person, that she was 7'4" tall. So I thought she was a giant. And it took me till they were talking about how tiny she is later that I went back and looked at it.
She finishes by saying hello to the model land and goodbye to the Canna dell'Abra. She sang, her voice rising and falling melodiously. Mm-hmm. So your dolphin squeaking was not accurate. The pouch bulged.
Ooh.
And Shiraz tumbled inside and snap into the green hole once more.
Green
what is
hole?
Happening? What is happening?
The green. Green.
What do you mean the pouch bulged and Shiraz tumbled inside? What does that mean?
Well, you'd think of the pouch would bulge after she tumbled inside if you're talking about like a dog catcher net.
That's what I'm saying. I can't picture any of this.
No, it's terrible. We've got goo, we got bulging, we got green holes, fudge. It's all very off-putting. Okay. I do not let your young adults read this, I think is my takeaway.
Yes.
But then, you know, they sort of hammer this home because obviously none of us know what's going on, so they really need to spell it out. Stop, Tookie blurted out, surprising even herself. Don't you realize none of us look like Model Land girls? Not one of us? So I didn't really realize that because I've not been too familiar with the world of Model Land, so I'm glad they're holding your hand through that part.
Mm-hmm.
But it moves on to Chapter 12, and you sort of realize they're doing, as they assemble this crew, they're going with the... They're the misfits, I guess. So you're getting the thick girl, you're getting the petite girl, and so the third natural body type for them to pick up is, of course, albinism.
Yes.
that's just
so
how it goes.
Albino, almost translucent.
Another staple of our weird little world. I think Bella had the skin that was translucent to Edward. She looked like a naked mole rat or some sort of cave worm.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So they go to the world of Sans Color, where all the people there have nearly translucent pale skin and stark white hair.
They look like those hairless cats, only with an Edgar Winter wig on.
Sure, so. Yes. And when they see that, Shiraz says, "Everybody here sick?" "No, they have albinism," Tookie whispered back. "You mean they albinos?" Shiraz blurted out. Tookie was pretty sure it was rude to call them albinos, but she kept her mouth shut, not wanting to seem like a know-it-all. It's just grade-A stuff, really.
Yeah, and before we get to that, though, here's a sentence. Through the mesh wall of the pouch, Tookie saw a bear cave-sized hole and peeked in. Sticky, pasty gunk with peach fudge was lodged inside. She frowned. "I think we're inside an ear." So first of all, that classic standard size of the bear cave-sized hole. But secondly, what? She's seeing that, but she's not. But she said we're inside of the ear.
I mean, she was very able to understand that they had emerged from a plant stem, an interior that we were all familiar with. So maybe in addition to being preternaturally proficient at languages, she is able to identify interiors of objects that most people have never pondered.
Hmm. But did she pop out of a hair or an ear, I mean? Out of someone's hair?
They pop out of the Queen of Sans Color's head, forehead, ear. But she's not really the queen either, so. The pouch is emerging from all these places. Plant stem in the middle of a big boutique store. 7-foot candle full of white goo. And now albino woman's head.
What size are they?
it's a pouch full of bulging with three teenage girls and a scout with a tentacle necklace.
So what size does this woman have to be?
I think it might be like one of those things where they shrink down into like, what's that 80s movie where they go inside, their own body or something.
Oh, yeah. The The Great Adventure, so, or something.
I think
like
it's like that, where they shrink down into that thing as they enter into this like nether world of sort of Bill and Ted phone booth tunnels that takes them through these various places.
That could be, but I think you're doing the work for her there. I don't think she ever says they shrink.
Sure,
down.
Yeah. but it's continues to be frustrating. But I want to move on because I have a Sonic challenge here for you.
Oh, okay. You got in front of me line.
Yeah,
all right.
I cut. I've done two of them, but this is a good one. I know you're a big fan of eating this type of food, so you might have it ready to go. They're speaking their own language, but of course, Tookie understands. It's Calorian, Tookie whispered, listening to the distinct rasping, gurgling, popping, and sucking sounds. To the untrained ear, the language sounded like someone swallowing a bucket of raw oysters, but to Tookie, each tiny sound was beautiful. Every language was.
Okay.
Rasping, gurgling, popping, and sucking that sounds like someone eating a bucket of, swallowing a bucket of raw oysters. About as revolting an image as you could imagine.
Okay. I get the next Sonic challenge. okay, Calorian. It's beautiful. Beautiful rasping, gurgling, popping, and sucking sounds. Okay.
God, beautiful. Yes, the gagging I think is a key part of swallowing a bucket of raw oysters too.
All right, right back at you. The platinum-haired woman in the throne-like chair frowned, popped her tongue, and rasped at the highly decorated soldier to her right.
Well, I have a surprise for you because I picked out what I thought this would sound like. Okay. I have a special guest Sonic Challenge artist. This is from New Orleans' own Dr. John. And when I read this, it reminded me of something from the end of his song, I Walk on Gilded Splinters. So I have that. Oh. I have that ready to go for us.
Okay, well, there you go. I guess it's fair,
yeah,
to bring in outside stuff for the Sonic Challenge.
I got, yeah, you know, permission from the estate, since Dr. John is
certainly
dearly departed. But, yeah, I think that's his own. He was speaking Calorian before it was cool, man.
Yeah. And it was beautiful, too.
Dylan does say that she doesn't speak gobbledygook, and Tookie says, actually, I do, and then translated what the Prime Minister had just said. The girls goggled at her. Booyah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like a treat every time it happens now.
All right. Get ready to picture this now.
Mm-hmm.
Whirling sideways, the pouch burst out of the bubble dangerously close to a war-torn concrete jungle that surrounded Sans Color. Thousands of 10-foot spears pointed at the bubble now shifted their aim to the scout. A horde of demonic yellow-eyed jungle inhabitants stared at the pouch, roaring savagely. One wrong move and the pouch would be ripped to shreds. What the hell is happening?
Yeah, so it's a concrete jungle, which, you know, that's what people refer to a city as that, right?
Yes.
But these are actual jungle inhabitants, like what you're supposed to think in a cartoon when you just see the bright yellow eyes and sort of like fanged teeth of an animal hiding in between like the palm trees and stuff in a jungle.
Yes.
And they have 10-foot spears.
Yes.
Thousands of them.
And where is the pouch?
Pouches emerged from the bubble, and the bubble was,
yes,
around the city. And the pouch is,
okay,
now in the concrete jungle, and those guys are just standing outside the bubble with spears all day long?
I guess so. And then the bubble is hanging within reach of their 10-foot spears, or just out of it? Because they're... So it's just hovering...
Well, I mean...
10-plus feet above the ground?
I imagine it's like... You know, sort of cruising, like the Bill and Ted phone booth or the Great Glass Elevator. But that is how the chapter ends. So you're left to sort of puzzle that out. If you were doing this as like a bedtime story and that was like, this is the last chapter for tonight, the kid would clearly be up all night just like trying to wrap its head around what had just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really get that great of an expression, explanation in chapter 13, because Dylan just asks, what in the name of wombat milk are those things? which is quite annoying. And then someone explains that they are leg gizzards who eat calorians and are trying to get into the bubble to eat more of them. I'm sort of anticipating them. There's a graphic novel called Bone that has these animals in them that are very like fangs, and they're rat creatures. That's what I'm imagining. These things, they have just like big teeth. They're sort of like beasts with the crazy eyes and stuff like that. That's what I that's what my takeaway is. But she doesn't give that thing. Tyra doesn't say they're like the things in Bone. That would be appreciated.
What she does give us is that, so these things, the Ligazards, they go in and murder these people and butcher them to get at their pancreas and thymus glands.
Yeah, they're sweetbreads.
Sweetbreads.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's a lovely little detail for the kids.
Right.
I mean, I guess they just leave they're like killer whales, you know, where they eat the sharks, and then they're able to just extract their livers. And so there's all these dead sharks floating out there with no livers.
Wow.
Because of the, yeah.
They suck them out.
I guess that's
like
what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun. So who knows if that will come back up, but it does give us the chance to reveal that, much like, you know, sort of a Star Warsian type of thing, every girl in the pouch at this moment has lost their father. What was the Sans Calorian woman named? I don't remember already.
Piper?
Piper, of course. Her father was eaten by a leg gizzard, and everyone else has had their father die too. And Tookie says, I lost my father too just recently. Says it was true in a way because he had renounced her. But, you know, if it's true and his suspicions are correct, he might not be your father in the first place. So who knows what's going on with this.
Yeah, so it's kind of a lie, but kind of not. Another pouch question, please.
Oh, sure.
A loud thud echoed through the pouch. Dylan had fainted. She was now on her back, a ghastly expression frozen on her face.
Okay.
So, what the hell is the pouch?
Yeah, she has a room to now be fully prone. So,
but it causes a thud echoing through the pouch?
She landed on fabric, thereby thudding. And if it is, you know, if someone passed out in an elevator, your standard, like, elevator, you'd probably hit someone else on the way down, but it doesn't appear that that has happened. So they're not all packed in like it would be in a fabric pocket. It is a much, like, more spacious item. So it could be like a TARDIS, where it's just bigger on the inside type of thing. I don't know. I didn't write it.
I'm exhausted from trying to figure out what this thing is.
Well, it's not going to get any easier because they are currently approaching Model Land itself, and all the girls have decided I think this was alluded to in the very beginning, that there was these rumors of child sacrifice, but it turns out that they've all heard these. They're widely known that every year Model Land brings in four lesser girls to brutally experiment on and then sacrifice them to some sort of ancient gorgeous goddess or something. And Dylan, that's what causes Dylan to faint. So that's just something that they all know, and they dropped that it was four people, which I don't think was made clear earlier. So they really believe that they are being taken to their deaths by this scout.
Yeah, and they the reason they know about this is because of a well-known song about it.
Oh my God!
But at this point, it's kind of like reading Tolkien, where it's like, yeah, I'm going to skip this song.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not moving the plot forward.
If I see it italicized, indented, and in verse, that's not something I need to read.
So, yeah, Shiraz sings the sweet haunting song about how they torture and connive till no bones are connective. They blaze the four alive.
And so is Tookie then translating from her to the other girls every time she sings?
What's Shiraz's language?
Dr. Shiraz's language was that.
Is Calorian? The bucket of oysters language.
No, no, no. It's
the
Icelandic volcano. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And so they do soar past the obelisks, the architecturally interesting obelisks, on the way to Model Land. And when they arrive there, they are greeted by a tall creature with a head shaped exactly like a human hand, with four fingers and a long thumb. Glad they clarified what a human hand looked like. The palm of the hand contained pale blue eyes, two holes for a nose, and two full lips. Below the strange head hand was the body of a normal human. So it is sort of hamburger helper mascot guy, mascot type of thing.
Yes, if it was done with one of those, you know, what would this cartoon character really look like? You know, what would the hamburger helper look
right,
like?
And they're the most horrifying things in the world.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's Guru Applause. He seems to be, he at least shows up one more time again. But they do the thing again where they invent something utterly ridiculous, and then Money Plane style, they joke about it. "That thing gives new meaning to the phrase, talk to the hand," Dylan whispered. Tookie couldn't help but giggle. And that was my first honest book throw moment across the room.
Yep, I got it just, here as well.
How dare you?
Yep. But I cannot picture what is happening with this creature. And then there's something with a nude figure coming out of a box that was made of smoke or a door. Did you make any sense of that?
I just wrote impossible to picture. Suddenly, the smoke flew away, coming to a halt in a whale wall-like clump a few feet from the girls. Slowly, the cloud wall reassembled, forming a door of black smoke. The door flipped open. Behind it was a black chamber full of angry, swirling wind. So smoke dissipates, forms a wall-like clump. Then the cloud wall reassembles, forming a door of black smoke, which opens, revealing a chamber of angry wind.
Again, picture the guy writing this.
Right.
Come on, man.
I know. It's,
you know, the walls, those famous clumps we all live inside of. And then a nude figure emerged from the smoke doorway, stalking toward them with a rhythmic pace. With each step, the tornado wind whipped even faster. Tookie felt a tugging sensation under her feet. The pouch whipped out from underneath them and streamed into the figure's fingertips.
Yeah.
Dylan then steps out of the book for a second and says, "What in the heck is going on?"
Yes, yes.
She murmured.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you, Dylan.
But yeah, it turns out that it's the scout, and she's like flinging around a bunch of underwear. And they list some brand names or some styles, which I just, again, eyes gloss over. But then she chose a pair of very unsexy blue bloomers and put them on her bare body. And then she lifted both hands to her face and peeled her veil slowly from the bottom up. The girls oohed and awed. And I just wondered, did they really ooh and ah? I mean, you know,
like some ooh and some awed,
I mean,
maybe?
Yeah, it seems unlikely. You never like... Ah, really? I mean, you mostly, ooh.
I guess it's, you know, sometimes you've seen people do it performatively at fireworks where they all go, ooh, and then somebody leads them in an ah.
Sure, yeah.
And everybody's having fun. I guess that happens.
One of those catchy Model Land kind of chants.
Yes. Well, there's one coming up, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. But it is revealed that it is the mythical, renowned Intoxabella CL. And her introduction, I believe this was in fanfic, was, "Sorry, I was sweating buckets back there." The Intoxabella sniffed her armpits. Yuckity yuck. So I just said it was an all-time terrible character introduction. You know, you think about the first time you saw Jar Jar Binks and he was like, you know, "Misa Anakin." This is worse. But the armpits, again, look at the guy. It's a thing, right? This is sort of this is his wiki feed or something.
Yep. He doesn't say how hairy they are, but...
yeah, but you know he's thinking it.
Yeah. So they realize who this is, and so Dylan leads the CL cheer?
Yeah.
Are we pronouncing it CL?
Yeah, I think it was sort of... Maybe it was said that it was like seal, so CL, but okay. Like, yeah, I think like that.
"See, how did the cheer about seal go?" Dylan asked, her eyes bright. She raised her arms overhead, fists clenched. "Give me a big C, a little L, a tilde." People were chanting that? That was a cheer?
Yeah. Cheers that, involved
what,
spelling
where
things
would
with
that
tildes.
Be utilized?
I don't know. It does say that Seal was a legendary spoken word poetry slam champion, which I was. I'm horrified to learn that that is part of this world, because you don't put that in there unless you've got some of them coming for us to be forced to read. But is this part of the same chant? Because this is the one I had singled out. Atta girl, Dylan whooped. Simple and clean, no, but not a tongue twister. That's the way you spell CL. Which, again, prompts another character to step out and please stop, CL said flatly. So, all right, you know, she's smelly and gross, but I appreciate her doing that in this moment.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I was having a really hard time here, because then the hand comes out again. The hand man, and he does something. He, like, claps with his own, you know, like, hits his own face or something.
Yeah, he does. He sort of flips his hands back and forth and, I guess, you know, makes himself hit himself.
And then Zhen Zhen changes her hair color?
Yeah, who's...
I didn't understand what that was all about.
Zhen Zhen? Oh, that's the tour guide. I think that's in the next chapter.
Oh, sorry. I skipped ahead.
This we get, just for the sake of plot, CL says, you guys all made it, and she refers to the three girls as Hendel, Catherine, and Woodland. We don't know what that means yet, but it seems like
I didn't know what that meant
she
either.
She knows them as other people. And then they go to the sorting hat. The mosaic face, who sort of admits them into Model Land. It's a painting that is obviously a mosaic. It's a work of art that speaks to them. The one thing that I would have absolutely lost my mind about is that they admitted to Model Land a girl named Bibiana of Terra Bossa Nova. And if we had had a second Bleriana in this 372 verse, I think I might have, you would have never seen me happier.
Yeah, I think we would just, like, close down the podcast. Yes.
Right. Yeah, we would realize we're being Truman Showed at this point in time.
Oh, yeah. So they each walk up to it, and it's, you know, kind of like a mechanical version of the guard of the Wizard of Oz, you know, like, who dares to come challenge the Great Oz? And they each say their weird names. Mm-hmm. She's so bad at these names, or he, whoever the hell is doing them.
Yeah.
They're just not, they're not musical at all, mm-hmm. and, you know.
Oh, Chaste Runnings doesn't get it going for you? Even when she shimmies showing off her round, pert butt to the mosaic?
What's that guy's name again?
The author, yeah. See if he's on your neighborhood list or something.
Michael Salort. Just be on the lookout, everyone.
But yeah.
So they one by one, they do it. And then, what's her name? Seal. Seal comes up and skips the whole thing by putting a diamond tentacle into the face?
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty standard.
Okay.
She, like, she shorts it out or something, or she hacks into the mosaic through her tentacles and lets them all walk past. So we're getting the sense that these girls, as they also expected, do not belong here. But Seal is pulling some strings or something.
Yeah. Okay. So she's a bit of a bureaucrat, but she has a sour attitude, and we're supposed to like that, right? She's sassy.
Yeah, that's why she said, please stop, when Dylan was doing her catchy chant.
Yeah, nice. Okay, well, maybe I'll like her. We'll see.
We'll see, yeah. Put on some deodorant and talk to us tomorrow.
Yes.
We're going to move. We have our final chapter, but I realized we just sort of got caught up in this. We didn't do any fanfic, so let's do that right now. And now I bet they bitching because my flow switching, trying to tell me what to write upon some fanfiction. Can't they just be happy? I no longer have to face eviction. All right. Real or fanfic is this department where we ask Mike to identify which of these five segments are from later in Model Land, actual text written by Tyra Banks and or her ghostwriter, or fanfic that our listeners have submitted. And many of these listeners are our beloved Patreon supporters. These are truly the intoxabellas of the podcast, the people who go on over to patreon.com/372pages and help us keep the podcast running. They are our...
Almost every one of them has translucent skin and is 4'7" tall.
Yep. If you support the podcast, you have a 91% increase in your chances of having your fanfic read here. So yeah, we truly appreciate them. We did a fun meet the authors yesterday. Bob Fingerman drew a character, and Sean Thomason from Rift Trex and the Ringheads podcast came by and portrayed a Spencer's Gifts enthusiast.
I should point out that Sean is, in fact, a Spencer's Gift enthusiast, is he not?
I said it was, you rarely get to hear someone enthuse about something they're truly passionate about. And even though he was in character, it was clear that that was coming across. It's like the sort of thing you've been waiting your life to have a chance to talk about for 30 minutes uninterrupted. And we finally got there. But yeah, so these are five excerpts, potential fanfic, potential real. They could all be one. They could all be the other. They could all be a mix of the two. So let's get after it. Number one, The lights went down in the theater and everyone shut up, except for a few snobby girls who couldn't stop complaining about their seats. As a booming beat blasted from all corners, a person appeared center stage. Tookie couldn't see her face, but the vibrancy of her dress hurt her eyes even up in the mezzanine. Every time she looked at it, it seemed to grow longer, adding more colors than she had never even seen before. Then the figure began. "Listen up, girls, for I'm your head mistress. It is time to get down to business. Y'all want to be Isabella's? Being hit on by all the fellas? We're going to teach you how to strut and pose from the heels of your feet to the tip of your nose. So get ready to start your classes. Now get up off of all your asses." She disappeared in a puff of pink, glittery smoke. The entire room burst into deafening applause.
If I didn't know better, I'd think that was the guy who did the blue blocker sunglasses rap. I put him on as a shocker, man. I love all these blue blockers. I'm going to say that someone latched onto some good fanfic with those, that kind of chant.
All right.
So it's fanfic.
All right. Number two. "I have a surprise for you," the Belladonna's voice rang out. "Something young, maturing girls can only receive here at Model Land. Kara was your first class, or shall I say your first period of the day, but guess what? It will also be your last." "Huh?" Chaste pulled out her schedule. "It says I have two more classes after this." Ah, the guru shook his finger. "Not that kind of period, mommy," the Belladonna continued. "The cycle you had this morning will be the last period you will ever have for the rest of your lives." There was silence, turned heads, questioning looks. "We want no excuses for you missing classes or shoots or shows. So Model Land is ridding you of the pain and suffering of your menstrual cycles and cramps forever," the Belladonna masthead explained.
Oh, that seems weird enough to be Tyra. I'm going to say that's real.
Wow. All right. Number three. "The purple rubbery blob quivered where Tookie's spoon touched it. The way it shriveled mimicked her own withering stomach, and she thought remorsefully of the stash of strawberry sausages, lemon dough balls, and other snacks back at 4B. She risked a look around and saw her companions were all having variations of the same reaction. Chaste spoon was hovering before her mouth, eyes staring in blank horror at the trembling globule. Zopressa had a similar expression on, but Tookie suspected that she had eaten far worse as a dumpster diver. "The purple warples are a delicacy of ours," trilled the sing-song voice overhead. "Proven by the world-renowned Dr. Stanley Boss Figgendoof to lower your cholesterol by 4.6%. They eat up the fat and exude sumptuous oils to bring out your inner shine. Just the thing for all you tubby wubbies out there."
Oh, it's good. I think it's fanfic.
Wow. All right. Number four. "Looks like someone set the bikini teeny weenie or two sizes too small," Zarpressa trilled as Chaste chuckled chummily beside her. Tookie turned to see Dylan in a two-piece that could barely contain her curves. Her upstairs looked like a pair of mangoes trying to escape a grocery bag, while her downtown looked like a pair of pile drivers hung together with a hair tie.
What? Is that, what's his name? Malort? Chris Malort? Michael Salort.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's creepy enough. I'll say real.
All right. And number five. "Something whipped past Tookie's ankle. It made a teeny boing sound like a bug on springs. As the rest of the Bellas filled in, including Chaste and Zarpressa again, the Likey sisters and Kamalini, more of the creatures zoomed through the air. Girls screamed. Kamalini clasped her head over her headbanger. Finally, Tookie spied one standing still on a table. It was a small mouse-like thing with pointy ears, a long tail, and a slit across its belly. "Excuse me," Zarpressa screamed to the guru, who didn't seem alarmed by the chaos. "This classroom is infested with vermin." The guru chuckled. "Nah, they're just too jerky. Grabbing a set of chopsticks from the table, she caught a hopping creature as it passed. "You little bugger!" She tossed it into her mouth. "They taste like chicken. If you catch one, I'll let you eat it." Half the class shuddered, but Tookie salivated at the jerky. She was so starving, she'd have eaten everything.
What?
Eaten anything, sorry.
What is going on? I don't... it's clever if it's fan... I'm going to say it's fanfic. Look, this whole thing has been a guess. I have no idea.
Right. All right. This is some improvement, I think. So, number one, this was the one of the Blue Blocker rap. Mm-hmm. You said fanfic. That was fanfic written by Harris, who evidently latched on to the horrible chance. Number two,
yes.
Young maturing girls eliminating all future menstrual cycles. You said real. That was real. That was submitted by Lorne, who said he just wanted to make us squirm. So we got that to look forward to. Seems weirdly eugenic-y, kind of.
Seems a little strange.
Number three was the purple rubbery blob. Purple Wurples are a delicacy. You said fanfic. That was fanfic written by Khan. So three for three so far. All of these, I believe, contained Chaste. All but the first one. That was something people picked up on. Chaste was the girl who just sort of snickers at the things that Zarpressa says. number four, this was the bikini teeny weenier and Dylan wearing a bikini. You said real. That was fanfic written by Doug.
Okay.
And
he's channeling Michael Alort. Good for him.
Well done. Yes. It's just off-putting enough. And number five, this was the weird classroom infested with vermin and they're just too jerky. This was... You said fanfic. That was real from later in the book, written by Jeff.
What?
That is Guru Laru from...
Sent
in by Jeff.
Okay.
It's a... she's Australian from Didgeridoo, a hot land full of beaches and unusual animals with strange names. So maybe that's all where the wombat milk come from.
Yeah. What? It had a slit in its belly was part of the thing?
Yes. It had a small... mouse-like thing with pointy ears, a long tail, and a slit across its belly. So maybe it's one of those like desert mice that can like jump really high or something. I don't know. Look, it's always good to get these future moments in the book for real or fanfic, and you just are like, how are they going to connect the dots to get to this absolute madness?
I don't think there's any dots to connect. They're just flying around in goop bags now. I don't know what's going to happen.
All right. Well, this is the last chapter for this time. This is chapter 14, Arancia Rosa de Sicilia. And this was along the same lines as my did everyone ooh and ah, but they gates creak open to reveal a path through a large entrance hall. Lining the entrance on both sides of the hall were about 20 statues of women, each more glorious and stunning than the one before. And I said, at some point, the levels of gloriousness and stunning have to start being indistinguishable. Like, come on.
Yes. Right.
As we walk through this, we're not consistently oohing and aahing at this.
Yes. I will point out that Shiraz, I believe, just sings everything.
Yeah, I guess that's her
thing. Have you ever seen anything like this? Shiraz sang out, stretching her arms and spinning around. "I'll give you my firstborn if you stop singing," Dylan muttered. So that would be annoying, I would have to say. That would really get on your nerves.
Right. And did they say that they can now understand her? I forget. Because otherwise he's singing. It sounds like, you know, Yoko Ono's performance art.
Yes.
Anyway. But we get the scent of blood oranges in the air, which was also, you know, the connections keep coming, reminiscent of Digital Fortress. I looked that up. I'm just going to read the passage because it was so amazing when it actually happened in the middle of this techno thriller. The patio, Jardín de los Naranjos, was famous in Seville for its 20 blossoming orange trees. The trees were renowned in Seville as the birthplace of English marmalade. An 18th-century English trader had purchased 3 dozen bushels of oranges from the Seville church and taken them back to London, only to find the fruit inedibly bitter. He tried to make jam from the rinds and ended up having to add pounds of sugar just to make it palatable. Orange marmalade had been born.
Digital Fortress.
Yes. What else? They look at this liquid gold substance that sort of emerges out of the ground and mirrors them, which is essentially what the character of Guigi in Luigi's Mansion 3 is. There's a
oh, it like creates a doppelganger.
Yeah, a Luigi made of goo. I guess you could also say it's like the liquid metal in Terminator 2, but I go with Gooigi based on what the pouch filled with earlier.
Yeah. I should point out, I'm guessing this is the only time that the phrase pouch mates has ever been used in print before. Tookie and her pouch mates spun on their heels.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, unless you've got like, you're a Australian zookeeper working at a kangaroo rescue or something, and you're trying to raise a kangaroo that was abandoned by its mother by putting it into another one's pouch.
Well, maybe I did not look it up. Maybe I should look it up, but I'm going to guess it. But and then I have a sonic challenge.
God!
Gotcha. Yeah. Excuse me, the pretty girl said. I'm looking for Tookie de la Creme from Peppertown, Metopia. She had a Bay Jingle accent. So you're going to have to make up what a Bay Jingle accent is.
Oh, my God.
Excuse me, I'm looking for Tookie de la Creme from Peppertown, Metopia.
Okay. Yeah, excuse me, I'm looking for Tookie de la Creme of Peppertown, Metopia.
That was unexpected.
It came out of my mouth unexpected, too. I thought Bay Jangle, like if it's Northern California, you could get some like vocal fry going on, but that seemed a little too obvious.
Wow, okay.
Hey.
That was good.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, so that's Bay Jingle.
Yes.
Mr. Bay Jingles.
So the doppelgangers, all the other girls walk up and kind of see themselves as their doppelgangers, but these all, the pouch mates, they all turn into question marks? Is that what happens?
Yes, the Gooigi turns into question marks, and you might remember that the question mark was what was underneath the car whose roof turned into fabric.
Yes.
So
yes.
There's a very clumsy, very inconsistent theme happening here.
Yes. And then I just absolutely did not understand what happened with, Zhen Zhen's hair morphing and changing colors. I had no idea what that was supposed to be, what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
No, of course not.
Okay.
Zhen Zhen is the tour guide who's obsessed with Seal, who's sort of showing Tookie and them around. I'm not sure what the takeaway is. I think she's just trying to change to look more like Seal, but that's... We're left to decide what payoff that's going to have.
Well, so there's that madness, but then everything gets grounded by a paragraph like this. Oh, sister, we are getting bitterballed by those girls, Dylan muttered. Bitterballed? Piper raised an eyebrow. Bitterballs are in aisle 592 at the Boo Big Teak, Dylan explained. They clear up all sorts of gastrointestinal problemos. But Lordy, the expression on your face gets stuck in while your belly is getting healed is a stinker. So, pretty straightforward. Sure. I don't think I need to explain that.
And so none of them are like, we know what this is, or it's a product unique to the Big Boo Big Teak Nation, or I don't know.
I'm lost. I'm utterly lost.
I was infuriated by this. Because it shows them the M building, which is the main like Model Land dorm. But Zen Zen says there's also an O building. Can you guess what it stands for?
Oh, yes.
We get ovaries, Chase called out slyly. Obi tried a girl from Fuji. Ox tongue, Shiraz yelled. Oddballs, Tookie whispered. No, Zen Zen grinned. The O is for. She drew it out, pausing for effect. Opera. Moving on. It is sort of like that tour guide of a college campus sort of thing where they've obviously got their patter and their jokes built down. But it was like that if they just, you know, if it was being generated for them by a neural network where it had no payoff and made no sense. It didn't amuse anybody.
Yeah, we did a distillery tour once, Bridge and I, when we were in, did the Nashville thing and went up to Cincinnati. And there was a small distillery, and the two other people joined the tour with us. So the tour guide said at the beginning, he goes, since this is so small and it's just us talking, should I just drop my, patter of jokes? And Bridget and I both immediately went, yes. And the guy goes, oh, well, that hurts my feelings.
Wow.
He was super sad. He thought we were supposed to go like, no, of course we want to hear your jokes. We both in unison go, yeah, just drop those. And then he kept giving us crap after that. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Did I say something there? Should I not? And we're like, would you stop? You asked us.
We did something two nights ago. My cousin's wife got us something, or I guess she got offered to it. But it was during last year, there was like a company that did scavenger hunts in cities and stuff like that. And they, you know, they weren't able to do them for a while. So they pivoted to online through Airbnb. So it was like a virtual tour. So it was a mix of trivia / scavenger hunt in your home. But she was showing you these weird places across the country, and they showed you a place on off the strip in Vegas, the old town Fremont Street, and mm-hmm. it was a casino where in the men's bathroom, behind the urinals, they had big chunks of the Berlin Wall. And wow. Part of her patter was like, and it's not offensive. They just, you can go in there. Like if you're a woman, they'll show it to you. You go in there. It's not offensive. And at some point in that, my dad was like, I find it kind of offensive, actually. And I was like, if you know, by the third time you're informing your group of strangers that something is not offensive, you might be raising more questions than you're answering there. Yeah.
Protesting too much.
Wow. But yeah, tour guides. Let's hear it for him. What else do we have? We have eyes widening. Zen's eyes widened, which annoyed me at first because they weren't goggling. But then when I went back from my notes and tried to find this, keep an eye on widening eyes, folks, because it may be giving goggling its a run for its money, if not surpassing it very quickly.
Wait, we did a book recently
with widening eyes? Yeah, what was it?
Yeah, we kept track of the eyes widening too.
How wide they were getting.
Here's a throw the book across the room moment. You know, her mashing up of words and just deliberately making it hard to read and everything. This one sentence. Orb arena, where pretty boys and gorgeous girls battle in man attack. The one class where you'll have with your brother male modeling academy, bestosterone. That one sentence is enough to, that's a book tosser.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so, you know, transparently, you know, J.K. Rowling-esque that it's... but without, you know, the art to it, or I guess, you know, you just come, you do it second, and it's not as clever anymore. But that was, I noted that, you know, there was also Beautification Boulevard, Catwalk Corridor, all those just, you know, terrible alliterative, quote, world building places that were getting tossed at us.
Awful.
Dylan had some questions for the tour guide. She said, I didn't know the 7-7s actually trained. I just thought it was about who was prettiest. Which certainly wouldn't be you, as Zarpressa said under her breath. The prettiest? Wow. Zen giggled, addressing Dylan's question. Oh, Dylan, haven't you seen that pretty here is just a commodity, that every girl is easily exchangeable for the next Bella? I've been here for 25 minutes. I'm still, like, brushing goo off of me. No, I haven't really formed any major judgments about this place, Zen. God.
All right, here's another thing you have to picture. Good luck. They continue down the boulevard, passing more fantastical and unique structures. A windowless plaid cube, about the size of a department store, balanced on the very tip of one of its corners. To the left, Tookie saw a ship bobbing on a body of water that seemed to appear from nowhere. Through the round porthole, she could just make out a class in session. A group of girls stood in neat, even rows, making bizarre faces in unison. That boat building is where Kara 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 class takes place, Zhen explained.
I'm glad she explained, because I was starting to have some questions about it as you got through that paragraph.
You can't just picture a plaid windowless cube the size of a department store balanced on the tip of one of its corners?
There is as you drove from San Diego to L.A., there was like an Irvine Science Center that was a cube on its corner. It was silver. It was sort of eye-catching from the 5 freeway. So that was what my mind went to. But a boat suddenly appearing and it's plaid and windowless you started to lose me. And Kara 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 class, which I think was in one of the fanfics or one of the reels. I guess we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Well, as Zarpressa keeps making those comments, I just like that Chaste keeps either snickering at her flat insults. Zarpressa says, rolls her eyes and says, where did CL dig up this idiot savant? She whispered loud enough for everyone to hear and Chaste giggles. So you've got a real, Scut Farkas and Toadie relationship going on here. It's clearly Draco Malfoy and Crabbe and Goyle, but I like that Chaste immediately latches into that role as the person who giggles at the flat insult. She's also the one that shows off her butt and is pretty much wearing nothing during this.
It was Chaste, Zarpessa's crummy little toady.
Oh, and then they take off running at the end of this thing. Shiraz in a cheater-like sprint. Piper in a precise and efficient gallop. Dylan in a sexy swagger. But Tookie, in a very Tookie-like accident, falls flat on her feet.
I'm glad, though, that she did describe what running was. Tookie lifted her left leg, then her right, and then she started to run. So, appreciate that.
It is good to know. Yeah. Well, you question whether these were even humans, so you gotta, you can't take things for granted that again, like, green could be blue there.
That's true. Her, what were they, tennis racket size feet?
I think so.
So, yeah, I guess those could rotate in some way where her ambulation didn't come from lifting legs. I don't know.
One of those wind-up toys you put in water where the flippers just turn in a circle.
Right, yeah.
But that's it, I believe. Do you have anything else?
No, that's it.
Good. All right. Well, I think...
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot to pack in. It's sort of exhausting in some ways because it is just like a, no better way to put it than a fever dream.
Yeah.
And we haven't really even gotten to the plot yet. We've had hints of sacrifice, hints of, secret fathers, mysterious people with wingtip shoes, and it's going to start to come into a head, I'm guessing.
It's going to be all goo and question marks from here on out.
Well, until then, why don't we read some dumb sentences?
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big.
All right,
big,
well,
big.
Dumb sentences. Sentence I confess up front, I kind of failed on my part. I kind of forgot to collect dumb sentences.
Oh, man. Well, they abound. We've been discussing everything has been very dumb. I mean, you could pick that that quote in the dolphin language if you just wanted to, but
sure.
See what people come up with. Right. Well, here's one from John. The Intoxabella sniffed her armpits. He just said it's definitely not a sentence you'll see in any other book. And, I don't know. I haven't read all of Hemingway, so it could turn up. I mean. Shane submitted, this is Tookie's dad parking his car. Success, he murmured, pumping his fist. And he says...
Oh, that was the one he took from the handicap spot.
Yes. And yeah. I didn't specify whether he was able to park there because of his missing eye or not.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But Shane said, a lot of murmuring in this book. I can't help but picture Mr. De La Creme as Kip from Napoleon Dynamite from now on, is he? Emma submitted, the jealousies in your big body are burning like big dripless candle. That was Shiraz who said that to the girls when she had entered the pouch from Candelabra. Justin submitted, bitter balls for sure. I, again, think that might not be one you would see in any other book, but who knows? This is Amanda, submitted from during the T-Dod. Six instigating girls continued to prance and strut around the ruckus. She said, they're instigating something, but they aren't actually fighting, just prancing like horses? I don't know. Andrew submitted, that sword must have sliced your sanity. And, they didn't have as many of the super gratuitous Sean Penn-style alliterations, but they do start to stack up, even these tiny ones.
Yeah, they're very annoying.
Chelsea submitted, like the tiny ticks in the tick farm display way down aisle 135 and the tapping of a girl's foot at a messy counter marked the nation's customer service, which was clear across the store. A lot going on. None of it good.
There's a lot going on there.
Amy, they continued down the boulevard, passing more fantastical and unique structures. And we had a little exchange about this in email, just how Kleinian that was. Just trust me, they're fantastical. Also unique, she said.
Right.
Variety of 80s dance moves. Josh submitted, the scout's head began to blink, as if warning people that something amazing was about to happen. He asked, how would anyone know something amazing was about to happen just from the way her head blinked? You just have to throw your hands up at these. Harris submitted, that Jen, oh, we read that one already, the Orb Arena. He probably wanted to throw their book across the room for that. LaTanya submitted, her chest seared. It felt like her father's hands was squeezing all the air out of her body. And she checked and said, at no point does Tookie's father touch her in this scene. In fact, at the moment this sentence shows up, Tookie had just run out of the house and is nowhere near her father. Either Tyra removed the part where her father did, in fact, have his hands on her and forgot to remove the sentence, or she meant her father's words were squeezing all the air out of her. Who knows?
God.
Mike submitted...
Awful.
Yes. Mike submitted, the zipper of Tookie's bag made a loud scritch as she tried to pull it closed. And he said, normally a zipper only makes a sound if you succeed in pulling it closed. If it doesn't close it, it doesn't make a sound. Jay submitted another sentence that you would never see anywhere else. Suddenly, the pale girl was in the pouch, too. I guess we talked about that. Steve, oh, yeah, that's raw oysters we had. Jacob submitted, of course, Model Land didn't want her, a dirt and snot-eyed, freaky-looking forget-a-girl. It's pretty dumb. Hayden submitted, cowbells clanged again. And on its face, that night might not be stupid, but he says, the first and only mention of cowbells in the entire book.
I did. I had that as well. I was like, when did these cowbells clang already? They did not.
And Con submitted, so now your desperate, flabby behind is spying on me. That is, of course, Creme de la Creme to Mr. de la Creme. I have two. I can use these. No one sent these in. This is Mr. De La Creme. He walked Tookie toward the vehicle and shoved her into the back of the car as one might shove a pan of bread into the oven. That's great. Great visuals here. So when she, you know, when she tries to describe stuff that's new, it's terrible. And then when she just like uses these half-baked analogies, they're just very clumsy and very dumb.
Nice pull on that half bait there, by the way.
And then the other one I had was, as if it had been waiting to be released her entire life, a single tear dropped from Tookie's eye. So it's over-dramatizing something that, again, only happens in movies and TVs, I think, crying a single tear. Or anti-letter PSAs.
Right. By the way, I did look up any other instances of pouch mates.
Okay.
There's a few, but they're pretty obscure. But one is a charming, it's on Amazon, Charming Pet Products, Pouchmates Koala Small Plush Dog Toy.
Oh.
And so it's a little Joey and a mother.
Wow, all right.
So that's a Pouchmate there.
Aren't the marsupial pouches known to be like fairly like gross and like sticky places that you wouldn't want to stick your hand into?
I believe they eat their poo in there, yes.
Oh, yeah. We had one of those on our National Geographic special, didn't we?
Yes, I think so.
I think, yeah. Koalas are known to be, like, syphilitic, I think. Don't go handling anything that's come out of a pouch is my recommendation. Let's do some emails.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're going to cruise out, man.
Well, this is one from Jeff. Patreon supporters will know Jeff as the guy who read the entire quilting mystery series. And we did a very fun discussion with him where he filled us in on a lot of the details from those other six, eight books, maybe. But Jeff wrote in, I've had to do some catch up on Model Land because I've been busy doing more important things, by which I mean counting all the character in the entire Quilters series. I'll admit I was a bit worried it would turn out most of the characters were mentioned in the Quilter's Pushback. This was not the case. The grand total number of characters is 326. I didn't count references to authors or fabric designers, which would have increased the number by another 15 or 20. I did count a few characters twice, such as Kevin's drug money laundering college friend, who is named Jonas Chen in Book 2 and John Chen in Book 5, and the defense attorney introduced as Harold Michaels, who becomes Howard Michaels in the very next chapter. I'm going to miss these books.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a fantastic detail. I wish that had happened. That's very The Room. But he says, I'm going to miss these books, and I'll be counting the days until Book 10, The Baby Quilt, is released. Now, excuse me, I've got to get back to reading about 13-year-olds describing what French kissing is like. Next email was from Josh. He mentioned that the thing about Smize's increasing chances by 91% threw me off at first, too, but the corrected version also makes things pretty screwy. Remember, it was whether they increase your chances by 91% or to 91%.
Correct.
And he said, if there are 7 Smizes each year, those people each have a 91% chance, and 7 people total are picked each year. That means in the average year, 6.4 of the 7 are Smize owners. So thousands, if not millions of people are walking hoping to get picked, and nearly half the years, a non-Smizer doesn't even get in at all. So all that violence and horror does seem like a gigantic waste of time.
Yes.
But hey, people play Mega Millions every year too, so
right.
Stacy submitted, "Hi, I'm a new listener to 372 Pages, so I've only gone through a few books, but truly enjoy what I've heard thus far. I find it very interesting how celebrities write book characters. Modelland keeps browbeating the reader on how awful life is in this fantasy world. Bob Honey, who just do stuff, also describe people in the most baffling, disgusting way. Do you think this is how celebrities think of real average people, as though their humanity is made of depravity and suffering?" Good point. What do you think?
Well, I think in these cases, yeah, it's becoming clear, like, do you hate your life or do you hate us? Or, like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it's probably a little from column A, a little from column B, but I guess it does have that sort of, like, you know, politician going to a diner type of thing of, like, you know, well, let's go toss these swine a bone or two. I'll get my hands right. Dirty as I something for them to read.
A live mic moment of that ought to hold a little basket, right. Kind of thing.
This is from Seth. He says, my wife and daughters watch America's Next Model. Tyra is very in love with her own weirdness, by the way. However, the thing that stands out to me most is at the end of an episode, when the contestants are finding out who has not made it to the next round, Tyra will say after each and every contestant, "Now we will find out if you are that much closer to becoming America's Next Top Model." After 12 contestants, this gets to be mind-numbing. At first, I thought it was just brand promotion, but after 24 seasons, it's got to be a tick of some sort. I wonder if she tells her family every morning when she is going to work, "Goodbye, I'm off to see if one of the contestants is that much closer to being on America's Next Top Model."
Hey, stick with the formula, right?
Yes, hopefully there's a super cut out there of all those moments.
Yeah.
And last email was from Jen. She said, "Longtime listener, joined the podcast on episode 5 after bitching to a friend about how crappy Ready Player One was, and a friend recommended it. I've been enjoying the pod immensely. Anyway, Mike mentioned in episode 100 that Tyra Banks was probably the first author you've covered that could literally buy and sell your asses. So I decided to check net worth of all your published authors, and wow, what a depressing list. Feel free to format as a quiz if you actually want to use." I did not do that, but she said, "For Shatlard and Klukas, I only use the net worth of the celebrity writer for simplicity." Here we go. Who's your guess at number one there?
Tyra.
Well, I mean, it's sort of a trick question because George Lucas is up there with $7 billion.
Oh, so, Lucas, yeah. Right.
But
right.
Then Tyra's in the middle of the pack, it turns out. I don't know where this information comes from. I don't know if there's just celebritynetworth.com. But Dan Brown, $180 million, followed by Shatner, $160 million, and then E.L. James of The Mister, $150 million.
Wow.
Stephanie Meyer, $120 million. That seems, I mean, I question that. Stephanie Meyer has had 6 hit movies based off her books. Then Tyra, $90 million. It says, "The Estate of Bram Stoker, $85 million. She says, very, very rough estimate. I imagine that's like a $84.99 million, and that is from Dracula.
Yes.
And then Sean Penn, $70 million. And this, again, I question this quite a bit. Ernest Cline, $1 million. This has got to be inaccurate.
No.
Yeah, he probably earned that from Ready Player Two yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah. So who knows? I don't know where the number comes from, but it would be nice if that was how much Ernest Cline would be worth, but I fear it's closer to, probably still last on that list, but probably closer to half of what Sean Penn has.
Yeah. I wonder about Tyra. Doesn't she have, she's got so many businesses.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, the business, yeah, the stuff that she owns, I mean, you know, E.L. James just has those books. I don't think there's a 50 Shades line of bondage gear or something, and Stephanie Meyer, you've got to have earned more from those movies by the time, unless you signed a Taylor Swift deal or Billy Joel, you know, got hustled, your manager. I'm impressed that Shatner's retained that much too. It seems like he might have done some MC Hammer stuff with his money over the years, but I guess he's good with it.
Yeah, I was always wondering why he's continuing to do ads.
Sure, like, right. You
know, where it's like, really? Still?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Well, thank you to everyone who wrote in. Thank you for everyone who sent dumb sentences. Thank you for everyone who listens without doing any of those things, because we appreciate you all. And we especially appreciate the people on Patreon who keep it going. Next time, I think we're going to read through chapter 20. I'm not sure how much closer to the halfway mark that puts us, but hopefully we're nearing that, because we got to have some stuff start happening here. We got to have some antagonists and maybe some sacrifices, some dead kids. Let's get some dead kids.
Well, we know we got cessation of menses coming up to look forward to, so that should be fun.
Right, that's going to be a 372 first, I think.
Yes. Yeah, thanks, everyone. This has been a lot of fun.
All right, talk to you later.